Hello, friends and neighbors. I'm Steve, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And I'm going to be reading the Arizona Daily Star for today, the 9th of December, 2025. But before we go to the star, I thought we'd have a quick look at the weather summary that's given to us by the National Weather Service. They say, in short, high pressure settles into the region this week. This will result in dry conditions and high temperatures warming to above normal levels through this week. So, we're in a warming trend right now. So that's the weather. Let's go ahead and move over to the Arizona Daily Star for today, the 9th of December, 2025, and welcome, everybody. Welcome in. Hope you're having a good start to your day. Let's see. The first front page story is Trump proposing a $12 billion farm aid package. President Donald Trump is planning a $12 billion farm aid package, according to a White House official, a boost to farmers who have struggled to sell their crops while getting hit by rising costs after the president raised tariffs on China as part of a broader trade war. According to an official who was granted anonymity to speak ahead of the planned announcement, Trump will unveil the plan Monday afternoon at a White House roundtable with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins, lawmakers and farmers who grow cotton, corn, sorghum, soybeans, rice, cattle, wheat, and potatoes. Farmers have backed Trump politically, but his aggressive trade policies and frequently changing tariff rates have come under increasing scrutiny because of the impact on the agricultural sector and because of a broader consumer worry. The aid is the administration's latest effort to defend Trump's economic stewardship and answer voter angst about rising costs, even as president has dismissed concerns about affordability as a Democratic hoax. So there's a little bit on the farm bill, and I'm going to have a little bit more on the farm bill when we get to the nation and world section of the Star this morning. The next front page story opens with a picture of a bunch of European leaders with Vladimir Zelensky. And the title of this piece is called Zelensky Meets with European Allies. President Volodymyr Zelensky met French, German, and British leaders in London on Monday as Kiev's European allies try to strengthen Ukraine's hand in thorny talks on a U.S.-backed plan to end the Russia-Ukraine war. Prime Minister Keir Starmer gathered with Zelensky, French President Emmanuel Macron, and German Chancellor Friedrich Merz at the British leader's 10 Downing Street residence. Starmer shook hands with Merz on the doorstep of the residence, ignoring a reporter's shouted question. Macron arrived a few minutes later and also posed briefly for photographers with Starmer on the doorstep. Zelensky arrived some 15 minutes after the others. As he entered the building with Starmer, he gestured toward the resident cat, whose name is Larry, who was loitering on the doorstep. Zelensky said late Sunday that his talks with European leaders this week in London and Brussels will focus on security, air defense, and long-term funding for Ukraine's war effort. The leaders are working to ensure that any ceasefire is backed by solid security guarantees both from Europe and the U.S. to deter Russia from attacking again. U.S. and Ukrainian negotiators completed 3 days of talks on Saturday aimed at trying to narrow differences on the U.S. administration's peace proposal. Zelensky said in a post on Telegram, that's capital T, Telegram, that talks had been substantive and that National Security and Defense Council Secretary Rustem Umerov and Chief of the General Staff Andriy Hanatov were traveling back to Europe to brief him. A major sticking point in the proposal is the suggestion that Ukraine must cede control of its eastern Donbas region to Russia, which illegally occupies most but not all of the territory. Ukraine and its European allies have balked at the idea of handing over land. Starmer said he, quote, won't be putting pressure, unquote, on Zelensky to accept a peace settlement. The most important thing is to ensure that if there is a cessation of hostilities, and I hope there is, it has to be just and it has to be lasting, which is what we will be focused on this afternoon, Starmer told broadcaster ITV. In an exchange with reporters on Sunday night, U.S. President Donald Trump appeared frustrated with Zelensky, claiming the Ukrainian leader, quote, hasn't yet read the proposal, unquote. Russia is, I believe, fine with it, but I'm not sure that Zelensky's fine with it, Trump said before taking part in the Kennedy Center honors in Washington. His people love it, but he hasn't read it, said Trump. Trump has had a hot and cold relationship with Zelensky since riding into a second White House term insisting that the war was a waste of U.S. taxpayers' money. Trump has also repeatedly urged the Ukrainians to cede land to Russia to bring an end to the nearly four-year conflict. The European talks follow the publication of a new U.S. national security strategy that alarmed European leaders and was welcomed by Russia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the document, which spells out the administration's core foreign policy interests, was largely in line with Moscow's vision. So that's a little bit of an update, folks, on the Russia-Ukraine war. And here we have a short piece called Tattoo Removal. It's painful and it's costly. And this is Dateline Detroit. Colin Farrell's had done it many times. So have Angelina Jolie and Megan Fox. Heck, even Bart Simpson did. Whether it's Marilyn Monroe's face, Billy Bob Thornton's name, a sultry rose, or even Bart's partially inscribed homage to his mother, some tattoos simply have to go, for one reason or many others. But the process of taking them off is longer, much more costly, and ouch, extremely more painful than getting them put on, according to professionals in the industry. Also, due to health reasons, some souls who braved the ink needle should be wary of the laser when having their body art erased or covered up. So that's a little bit about tattoos. Be cautious if you want to remove a tattoo. The next front page story, states retreat from covering weight loss drugs. Well, some states are rethinking their coverage of GLP-1 drugs for weight loss as budgets tighten and Medicaid programs brace for cuts included in President Donald Trump's broad tax and spending law. As of October 1, 16 state Medicaid programs covered GLP-1s for obesity treatment, up from 13 states last year, according to a survey of the Medicaid directors by KFF, which is a health policy research group. But some states announced they will discontinue coverage or restrict who can qualify for it. Many doctors and patient advocates say the drugs will save money in the long run by reducing obesity-related diseases such as heart disease and diabetes. Many states, however, have concluded they just can't afford them. North Carolina Medicaid ended coverage of GLP-1s for obesity recently, citing shortfalls in state funding. California, New Hampshire, and South Carolina have said they will end coverage on January 1. Starting next year, Michigan Medicaid will limit coverage to people who are morbidly obese. Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin also are considering new restrictions. At last year's KFF survey, that's in last year's KFF survey, about half of the states said they were interested in covering GLP-1s for weight loss, according to Elizabeth Williams, a senior policy manager at KFF, who focuses on Medicaid. This year, most states are moving in the opposite direction. So, those are the front page stories this morning in the Arizona Daily Star. We started off with the $12 billion farm aid package that Trump is proposing. We then went to Zelensky meeting with European allies about ending the war. And we talked a little bit about tattoos being removed and how painful it can be and costly. And then finally, states retreat from covering weight loss drugs. And now we go on to the local news, the Tucson and region section of the Star. And if you're just joining us, welcome in. I'm Steve. I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And me and my dog, Chloe, are welcoming you in this morning as we read the Arizona Daily Star for today, Tuesday. And here's the Tucson and region section of the Star. We have a number of articles to read. First of all, Representative Grijalva slams health care costs, and also Juan Ciscomani. Representative Adelita Grijalva called fellow House member Juan Ciscomani, quote, just another MAGA rubber stamp, unquote, as she railed against the upcoming rise in health care costs for Arizonans who use Obamacare during a town hall Sunday on Tucson's South Side. The town hall, which included Representative Greg Stanton, a fellow Arizona Democrat, was held within the area represented by Ciscomani, Southern Arizona's 6th Congressional District, and the Republican congressman was often the target of criticism. At a similar event for U.S. Senator Mark Kelly Friday, Grijalva told a crowd of dozens that Trump and Republican lawmakers have had 15 years to fix a broken health care system, but have had no interest in doing so. The comments come as vote to extend the COVID-era tax credits that help lower the cost of health care for millions is set to occur later this week. Let's be clear about what the big, beautiful bill means for Arizona. Massive tax cuts for the wealthy and big corporations, paid for by slashing Medicaid and imposing the largest cut to SNAP in the program's history. So our most vulnerable populations are carrying this tax burden for those who are not contributing at all, Grijalva said. Republicans have refused to extend the ACA, that's the Affordable Care Act, premiums assistance to prevent health care costs from skyrocketing. Southern Arizonans deserve better, said Grijalva. She said, we deserve leaders that put families first, not wealthy donors, not special interests, and not a former president who treats working people as collateral damage in his political fights, Grijalva said, referring to Ciscomani. Stanton, whose district includes Tempe and parts of Phoenix, Mesa, and Chandler, said people tell him they are working harder than ever, but are only falling further behind. Costs rising, wages stuck, healthcare falling out of reach, families squeezed until the rich cash in. That is not random. It is Trump's economic blueprint, said Stanton, the former mayor of Phoenix. One of the people complicit in this chaos and corruption is right here in southern Arizona, Congressman Juan Ciscomani. So that's a little bit of an update, folks, on healthcare costs and comments by Representative Grijalva and Stanton. Next in our local news, arson is blamed for fires at 7 Arizona churches and 1 synagogue. And here is a picture showing a July 2025 photo of Casa Grande's St. Anthony of Padua Catholic Church during demolition following a suspected arson fire. So here's the story. A blaze at a Lake Havasu City church marked at least the 8th Arizona house of worship in recent years that has been struck by fire, including suspected and confirmed arson. Keith Gensamer, 49, was taken into custody November 30th as a person of interest in a fire earlier that morning at Calvary Baptist Church in the West Arizona City border in California, according to authorities. Police tracked Gensamer down through his truck's license plate. Charges against him will be released later, and the investigation continues, a Facebook post by the city said. The church said there was significant smoke and water damage, along with minimal fire damage in the incident. Officers responding to a reported burglary and fire put out the flames and found evidence indicating the fire was deliberately set, police said. Since May 2023, there have been multiple other arson cases in Arizona involving houses of worship, 6 churches, and a synagogue, specifically. Some of the arson cases have led to arrests, while at least 1 suspected arsonist remains at large. And it looks like LGBTQ+ is being targeted. On May 22nd, 2023, St. Stephen's Episcopal Church and First Presbyterian Church in the southern border town of Douglas, Arizona, approximately 119 miles southeast of Tucson, were set on fire. Eric Duane Redenfor, that's R-I-D-E-N-F-O-U-R, Redenfor, was sentenced to 36 years in prison in January 2025 after being convicted of 6 arson and hate crime counts stemming from the church's burning, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. Defendant burned a church because he disagreed with its position that women and LGBTQ plus individuals may serve as ministers, and then he burned a second church in the same historic square for the same reason. Then U.S. Attorney Gary Restaino, in a statement at the time, he said, the Episcopal House of Worship was demolished, and a new building is planned while the Presbyterian structure was being restored. The Justice Department said the sanctuary location was thought to be the country's only intersection, including churches from 4 denominations, the others being Southern Baptist and Methodist. Also, a community center has been damaged. On August 25th, 2024, the non-denominational Christian Church Alhambra Beloved Community near 19th and Glen Rosa Avenues in Phoenix suffered a fire that took out its 2-story community outreach center's interior. Phoenix Fire said that at the time, the fire appeared to have started in the gymnasium. So that's a little bit about arson fires targeting churches. Here's one called Where Arizona Reps Stand on Congressional Stock Trading Ban. Several Arizona members of Congress say they will sign onto a petition forcing a vote on a congressional stock trading ban, a measure that is divisive in Congress but has broad bipartisan support from the American public. But most are holding out. Representative Eli Crane, Republican of Arizona, has added his name to the discharge petition, a rarely used legislative tool that would, if successful, circumvent his own party's leadership with a simple majority. Lawmakers should not have the ability to profit from their access to non-public information, Crane wrote on social media. Republicans and Democrats should join forces and get this across the finish line. Representative Greg Stanton, Democrat from Arizona, will sign on to the discharge petition also, according to his spokesperson, Allison Childress. Stanton has been vocal about the issue in the past and has a personal policy of not owning individual stocks. So that's a little bit about Where Arizona Reps Stand on Congressional Stock Trading Ban. Here's a story, and it looks like it is the last story in the local section this morning. And it's entitled AI, that's artificial intelligence, to review some Medicare claims. A new Medicare program that uses artificial intelligence to review medical claims is set to launch in 6 states, including Arizona, and critics worry it will lead to patients getting denied necessary care and to more red tape for providers. The controversial new 6-year pilot program, set to begin January 1, is a model that makes use of leveraging enhanced technologies operated by private for-profit companies to authorize and possibly deny certain medical care for people enrolled in traditional Medicare, often known as Original Medicare. The enhanced technologies include AI. Some providers and a group of Democrats in Congress are trying to put a stop to this federal pilot program specifically, which is called Wasteful and Inappropriate Service Reduction, otherwise known as WISER, WISER. But their efforts have not been successful. Senator Mark Kelly, a Democrat from Arizona, recently criticized WISER on the social media platform X, characterizing it as a way for AI companies to profit from denying care to seniors. Officials with the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, that is, say the pilot program is designed to protect taxpayers. They say it will cut down on wasteful spending in Medicare, which is a program primarily for people over the age of 65, certain young people with disabilities, and people with end-stage renal failure. The other 5 states in the program are New Jersey, Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, and Washington. There you have it, folks. That's the local news from the Tucson and Region section of the Star. The first story was Representative Grijalva slams healthcare costs and Juan Ciscomani. The second story, arson is blamed in fires at 7 Arizona churches and a synagogue. The next story was about Where Arizona Representatives Stand on Congressional Stock Trading Ban, and then finally, artificial intelligence is going to review some of the Medicare claims. All right, let's go on to the business section of the Star this morning. And in business, we have the following. The business section of the Star talks about 3 things, I think. Now, the first is how one airline tackles travel disruptions. Alaska Airlines makes about 1,200 flights a day. Jonette Gregory has spent nearly 40 years tracking Alaska Airlines planes. Her job is to make sure Alaska's fleet is operating smoothly, to identify snarls in the making before they interrupt a flight, to make recommendations about what to do if something unexpected happens. She monitors the weather, keeps track of planned and unplanned maintenance, and can see every route the SeaTac headquartered airline is flying that day. Gregory is one of 270 employees in Alaska's Network Operations Center, or the NOC, Network Operations Center, a 24/7 central command center that those on the inside call the airline's nervous system. There, in that center, employees track Alaska's 1,200 daily flights and make adjustments for weather, maintenance, crew schedules, and other unexpected disruptions. One mishap can have a cascading effect through the airline's entire schedule for the day. How Alaska handles those widespread disruptions and more routine hiccups like winter storms is especially important during a busy holiday travel season. Here's a look inside the office building that keeps Alaska's flying. It's Alaska Airlines flying, and how the airline handled recent disruptions. It just shows a fella, Jay Warren, chief dispatcher for Alaska Airlines. He's talking with Chelsea Janes, director of bridge operations at TSAC Network Operations, trying to keep Alaska Airlines on time in the air. So that's a little bit about Alaska Airlines' efforts to tackle travel disruptions. Let's move on. Experts say Trump's tariff goals are unrealistic. While President Donald Trump has long praised tariffs as key to increasing wealth in the United States, idealizing Gilded Age policies that preceded the implementation of a modern federal income tax. Among the potential benefits Trump claims is the ability to replace revenue from federal income taxes with money the U.S. is taking from tariffs, a concept he has touted since his 2024 presidential campaign. Most recently, a cabinet meeting last week touted the same thing. But tariff revenue doesn't even come close to where it would need to be if federal income taxes were eliminated, and experts say such a plan isn't feasible. Here's a closer look at the facts. Here's the claim. The claim is that the U.S. is earning enough revenue from tariffs to eventually eliminate federal income tax. Here are the facts. This is false. Individual income taxes brought in trillions more dollars than tariffs did in the last fiscal year, accounting for more than 50% of total U.S. revenue, according to Treasury Department data. Tariffs made up only 3.7% of the total. In the first month of the current fiscal year, which began October 1, individual income taxes accounted for 54% of total revenue. Tariffs, 7.75%. So let's move on to other related things. It is actually importers, American companies, that pay tariffs. Those companies typically pass their higher costs onto their customers in the form of higher prices. Still, tariffs can hurt foreign countries by making their products pricier and harder to sell abroad. Foreign companies might have to cut prices and sacrifice profits to offset the tariffs and to maintain their market share in the United States, even if the numbers were made to add up. Replacing revenue from federal income taxes with that of tariffs, a Republican talking point since the 1990s, it poses many risks, tariffs especially at rates needed to make up for a loss in federal income taxes could lead to retaliation from other countries and a lack of imports. In fact, revenue could start going down the more tariffs go up. There is also a lot of uncertainty about how much revenue tariffs will actually take in, given periodic changes to Trump's policies. We would be talking about living in a completely different world than the one we live in now, said a person with knowledge of the activities. There was a time when the government's finances were provided through tariffs, but I believe, said the spokesman here, people were getting around with a horse and buggy back then and not cars. I mean, that was a completely different time. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Let's move on to the next business story this morning. And this one is entitled, 44% of trucking schools fail to meet standards. Well, nearly 44% of the 16,000 truck driving programs listed nationwide by the government may be forced to close if they lose their students after a review by the Federal Transportation Department found they may not be complying with minimum requirements. The Transportation Department said it plans to revoke the certification of nearly 3,000 schools unless they can comply with training requirements in the next 30 days. The targeted schools must notify students that their certification is in jeopardy. Another 4,500 schools are being warned that they may face similar action. Schools that lose certification will no longer be able to issue the certificates showing a driver completed training that's required to get a license. So students are likely to abandon those schools. It's not clear how many of those schools have been actively teaching students. Separately, the Department of Homeland Security is auditing trucking firms in California owned by immigrants to verify the status of their drivers and whether they are qualified to hold a commercial driver's license. The crackdown on trucking schools and companies is the latest step in the government's effort to ensure that truck drivers are qualified and eligible to hold a commercial license. This began after a truck driver that Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says was not authorized to be in the U.S. made an illegal U-turn and caused a crash in Florida that killed three people. The action reins in, quote, illegal and reckless practices that let poorly trained drivers get behind the wheel of semi-trucks and school buses, said Transportation Secretary Duffy. I think that's it on the local stories this morning. Yes. So let's go ahead and move on from the business section to the nation and world section. Nation and world over on page 32. And here we go, all the way down to page 32. Almost there. Okay, we're there. Nation and world news this morning, or this afternoon, depending on where you are. So, let's see. First of all, there is a reprise about something that I talked about on the front page, and that was the farm bill to bail out the farmers. The president says he'll give $12 billion to farmers hit by his import taxes. And President Donald Trump announced a $12 billion farm aid package Monday, a boost to farmers who struggled to sell their crops while getting hit by rising costs after the president raised tariffs on China as part of a broader trade war. Trump unveiled the plan Monday afternoon at a White House roundtable with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins, lawmakers, and farmers who raise, as we talked about at the beginning of the broadcast, cattle, corn, cotton, sorghum, soybeans, rice, and potatoes. We looked at how they were hurt, to what extent they were hurt. Trump said in explaining how the administration came up with the size of the package. We figured out a very exact number, and it was about $12 billion. Farmers generally backed Trump politically, but his aggressive trade policies and frequently changing tariff rates came under increasing scrutiny because of the effect on the agricultural sector and because of broader consumer worries. The aid is the administration's latest efforts to defend Trump's economic stewardship and answer voter angst about rising costs. The money will come from tariff revenue, Trump said. Rollins said the aid will move by the end of next February. More than $11 billion is set aside for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. That's the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, which the White House says will offer one-time payments to farmers for row crops. Soybeans and sorghum were hit the hardest by the trade dispute with China because more than half of those crops are exported each year, with most of the harvest going to China. The rest of the money will be for farmers who grow crops not covered under the Bridge Assistance Program, said a White House official who was granted anonymity after the formal announcement. In October, after Trump met Chinese leader Xi Jinping in South Korea, the White House said Beijing promised to buy at least 12 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans by the end of the calendar year, plus 25 million metric tons a year in each of the next 3 years. China purchased more than 2.8 million metric tons of soybeans since Trump announced the agreement at the end of October. Bessent, that's Scott Bessent, claims China is on track to meet its commitment by March 1. The size of the $12 billion aid package is about the value of total U.S. soybean exports to China in 2024 and half of the total exports of U.S. farm goods to China in 2024. And there was a little bit more covered on the meeting with the British Prime Minister, French President, and German Chancellor by Volodymyr Zelensky. And it is just a follow-up in this section and talks about President Volodymyr Zelensky meeting British, French, and German leaders in London on Monday to show a show of European support for Ukraine in what they called a critical moment in the U.S.-led effort to end Russia's war in Ukraine. And let's see, after the meeting, Starmer, Zelensky, and other leaders called Kiev's European allies, urging them to keep up pressure on Russian President Vladimir Putin. The leaders all agreed that now is a critical moment and that we must continue to ramp up support to Ukraine and economic pressure on Putin to bring an end to this barbaric war, Starmer's office said in a statement. And again, it shows the same picture as is on the front page of the Star of these leaders talking about the war in Ukraine. Let's move on to the next nation and world story. Bomb kills more than 30 in Congo after clash. The U.S. brokered peace agreement was signed less than a week ago. A bomb, though, killed more than 30 people and wounded 20 others in eastern Congo after a dispute between the Congolese army and a pro-government militia, despite a deal signed in Washington and touted as a major step toward peace in the country. Residents and civil society leaders told the Associated Press that the FARDC, the Congolese Army's acronym, and Wazalendo, which has been helping the army combat the insurgents, clashed before they felt the blast in the town of Sang in South Kivu on Sunday evening. Well, that's too bad. Immigrant released has ties to press secretary. So the next story talks about a Brazilian woman nabbed by ICE was engaged to Levitt's brother. A Brazilian woman with family ties to White House press secretary Caroline Levitt will be released from ICE custody while she fights potential deportation, an immigration judge ruled Monday. Bruna Ferreira, that's Bruna, B-R-U-N-A, Ferreira, who is 33, a longtime Massachusetts resident, was previously engaged to Levitt's brother, Michael. She was driving to pick their 11-year-old son, pick up their 11-year-old son in New Hampshire when Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, that's ICE agents, arrested her on November 12th in Revere, Massachusetts. Authorities later moved Ferreira to a detention facility in Louisiana where an immigration judge ordered that she be released on a $1,500 bond, her attorney Todd Pomerlow said. We argued that she wasn't a danger or a flight risk, he said in a text message. The government stipulated to our argument and never once argued that she was a criminal illegal alien, and waived appeal. So that's a little bit on immigrant released has ties to press secretary Caroline Levitt. And now let me take you around the world in the Nation and World section. In its digest, U.S. judge says Trump can't block wind energy. A federal judge on Monday struck down President Donald Trump's executive order blocking wind energy projects, saying the effort to halt virtually all leasing of wind farms on federal lands and waters was, quote, arbitrary and capricious and violates U.S. law. Judge Patty Saris, that's S-A-R-I-S, Patty Saris, of the U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts, vacated Trump's January 20th executive order blocking wind energy projects and declared it unlawful. Next up in the digest, President gives okay to computer chip sales. President Donald Trump said Monday that he would allow NVIDIA to sell an advanced type of computer chip used in the development of artificial intelligence to approved customers, that's quote-unquote approved customers, in China. There have been concerns about allowing advanced computer chips to be sold to China as it could help the country better compete against the U.S. in building out AI capabilities. But there has also been a desire to develop the AI ecosystem with American companies such as chip maker NVIDIA. And now, in brief, in the Mideast, Israeli police forcibly entered the compound of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees Monday in East Jerusalem, escalating a campaign against the organization that has been banned from operating on Israeli territory. Next, IceBlock app. The maker of IceBlock, which is an iPhone app that flagged sightings of U.S. immigration agents, sued the Trump administration Monday for free speech violations, alleging that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi used her, quote, state power, unquote, to force Apple to remove the app. Next in brief, there's an FBI protest. 12 former FBI agents who were fired after kneeling during a 2020 racial justice protest in Washington sued Monday to get their jobs back, saying their action was intended to de-escalate a volatile situation and was not meant as a political gesture. Next, in brief, Alina Habba, President Donald Trump's former personal attorney, Alina Habba, resigned Monday as the top federal prosecutor for New Jersey, leaving the job after an appeals court said she was serving in the post unlawfully. In a statement posted on social media, Haba assailed the court's ruling as political, but said she was resigning, quote, to protect the stability and integrity, unquote, of her office. Next in brief, clergy abuse. The New Orleans Archdiocese will pay at least $230 million to hundreds of victims of clergy sexual abuse under the settlement approved Monday by the U.S. bankruptcy judge Meredith Graybill that follows years of negotiations. And then finally, in Japan, a powerful 7.5 magnitude earthquake struck late Monday off northern Japan, injuring more than 20 people and triggering a tsunami of up to 28 inches in Pacific Coast communities, officials said. The Japanese government was still assessing the damage. And that's the nation and world this morning. And now we go on to sports with a reminder to our Wildcat fans that it's time to bear down. And that's back up on page 23. And here we are. Page 23 for the sports report is coming up. And first of all, bowl for the holidays. How about that? This is Arizona football, and it shows a smiling Arizona football coach, Brent Brennan. Arizona draws SMU in Holiday Bowl showdown in San Diego. An Arizona-SMU matchup at the Trust and Will Holiday Bowl in Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego was inconceivable, but the course of action to secure the Wildcats and Mustangs took longer than expected. After Notre Dame was excluded from the college football playoff, the Holiday Bowl reportedly made a bid for the Fighting Irish to face Arizona in the Holiday Bowl, which caused ACC, that's the Athletic Conference, affiliated bowls to delay their announcements. However, Notre Dame opted out of the postseason and became the third bowl eligible team to not participate in a bowl game, joining Iowa State and Kansas State, two programs going through a coaching change. Both Kansas State and Iowa State were each fined $500,000 by the Big 12 for bowing out of their bowl games. Less than an hour after Notre Dame officially announced its decision to back out of the postseason, SMU, which has a record of 8-4, was announced as the ACC opponent to face Arizona, which has a record of 9-3, which is a Pac-12 affiliate this bowl cycle. Arizona head coach Brent Brennan said, monitoring the Wildcats bowl opponent Sunday morning and afternoon was hectic. The Notre Dame thing, those players get to make those decisions, or that program gets to make those decisions, Brennan said. They had their reasons, and whatever they were, it's what they were. For us, it's definitely caused a delay in us finding out. So, there you have it. We were waiting and waiting and waiting, he said. But when we found out where we were going, everybody was fired up. The team went crazy. That part of it was special. And now on to Arizona basketball. Whoa. UA moves to number one in AP Top 25. Arizona basketball, Arizona men's basketball, moved into the number one spot in the Associated Press poll Monday for the first time in 2 years. The Wildcats, who are currently 8 wins and 0 losses, are coming off a 97-68 win over then 20th-ranked Auburn on Saturday, while also having beaten Florida, UCLA, and UConn last month. Arizona moved up from number 2, staying on top of Michigan, Duke, and Iowa State. The Cyclones opened the door to the top spot by beating the then top-ranked Purdue Boilermakers 81-58 on Saturday. Wow, how about that? So this is absolutely amazing. We congratulate the Arizona basketball Wildcats. Oh, here's something about high school wrestling. High school student athlete of the week. In a sea of black, maroon, and gold, Lauren Ciones, that's C-I-O-N-E, Lauren Ciones, or maybe it's Keones, platinum blonde hair stands out amongst her fellow Lancers at any wrestling tournament. At a packed lever gym on the Pueblo High School campus last week, Sione was one of the easiest wrestlers to spot, but not just because of her hair. As she sat sidelined waiting for her match, positivity radiated from her as she cheered on teammate after teammate throughout the evening. To her, wrestling is so much bigger than securing a win on the mat. It's about the community, her own at Sal Point Catholic, of course, but also the overall wrestling community, one that she has come to know and love in just her 1 year of competing in the sport. So congratulations to Lauren Tione, and she's pictured here as the high school student athlete of the week. And now, folks, let's go on and end the broadcast this morning with a little bit from the Tucson giving section of the Star. I always like to go to the giving section last because it's always so uplifting. And here we are. We talk in the giving section this morning about nonprofits having ample holiday efforts in place to help people in need. So, 'tis the season for holiday drives that inspire. Over the next several weeks, local nonprofits offer ample opportunity to support kids and families in need, the unhoused and children battling chronic illnesses. Unique offerings include the Greater Arizona Bicycling Association, that's GABA, G-A-B-A, Greater Arizona Bicycling Association, Toy Ride, a family-friendly event on the morning of Sunday, December 13th. Riders can choose from 8 different routes citywide, many of them along the loop, that will converge for a celebration at 10 a.m. at Rialto Racetrack, and that address is 4502 North 1st Avenue at Rialto Racetrack. Riders are asked to donate a new unwrapped toy to benefit the Salvation Army. It is the best of everything from helping people out and bringing together community and giving people the opportunity to make new friends and hang out with old friends, said Damian Alexander, who is coordinating the event for GABA. It has bicycles, toys, and kids, and shows the reason for the season. It is basically everything good about bikes and community and engaging people and getting them active in something maybe they otherwise would not do. Alexander emphasized that the event is much more than just a ride, attracting diverse abilities from the walks of life, from all walks of life, actually. Many cyclists wear costumes and decorate their bikes. We have ages 6 to 80, and it is a nice cross-section of the cycling community. We are not only doing good for the kids, but introducing different segments of the community to each other, said Alexander, who will dress as Santa and tow a sled with a Christmas tree. He, that is, Alexander, believes the spirit of generosity carries beyond the holidays, encouraging cyclists to donate bikes, equipment, and time to younger generations. If the homeless are on your mind this holiday season, GABA, that is the Greater Arizona Bicycling Association, GABA. GABA is also assembling 200 backpacks for the Endurance Project, GABA Toy Ride Donation Sites, also accepting donations for the Endurance Project. We put together backpacks filled with toiletries, sleeping bags, and other basic necessities, and on Christmas morning go out on bikes to deliver them. These are people most in need in our community, Alexander said. Children with complex medical conditions also face significant challenges, and the crew is dedicated to supporting these children and their families. So, some details. How to help? Well, the Salvation Army Stuff the Bus is what it's called, and it is going to be held 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, December 12th, where? At the Walmart, 7150 East Speedway Boulevard. That's the Walmart, 7150 East Speedway Boulevard. The Salvation Army is hoping to collect at least 2,000 new unwrapped toys, board games, and bikes for children ages 2 to 17 for the toy distribution that will be held December 18th, 19th, and 22. So, what? Well, this is the Greater Arizona Bicycling Association, GABA, toy ride to benefit the Salvation Army and the Endurance Project. When? The ride ends at 10 a.m. on Sunday, December 13th at Rieta Racetrack, 4502 North 1st Avenue. And so there you have it. How about that? So that's a little bit of Tucson giving this morning from the Arizona Daily Star. And I hope that you were enjoying listening to the Star this morning. Some of the stories were more difficult to listen to, probably. But my dog Chloe and I wish you the best of goodbyes. Have a great day, everybody.